Welcome back to Beyond the Uniform, where I interview military veterans about their civilian career. Today is episode number 31 with Travis Collier.
So unfortunate how veterans don't practice their new life until they're already in their new life. And really, by then, you're behind the eight ball. So any opportunity you could take now while you're in uniform, I mean, look at it this way. The military is funding you as the R&D project to find the best life, the best way you can serve others. Finding those condensed opportunities to gain that experience, to gain that data, and really triangulate. I mean, you're taking a fix. You're taking a fix on geography, income, occupation, and fit. And if it works, it works. If it doesn't, then you just keep trying something else.
Three reasons to listen to today's episode. Number one, Travis has a great perspective about treating your weekends and even your 30 days of vacation or leave as opportunities for mini internships, a way to take a quick, deep dive in figuring out what you want to do. Number two, Travis talks about mentors, advisors, and coaches, and how you can use a coach as a mirror to challenge your thinking and assumptions to achieve better results. And number three, in his work as a coach, Travis talks about common roadblocks he sees that get in the way of a veteran reaching their full potential. So here is my interview with Travis Collier. Well, my guest today is joining us from New Orleans, Louisiana. Travis, thanks for joining me.
Dustin, again, I'm so humbled with the opportunity. Thank you so much.
Yeah. Well, let me give everyone, all the listeners, a quick background for you. So Travis is a journeyman Marine inspector with the U.S. Coast Guard, where he served for the last 15 years. He holds a bachelor's degree in government and international affairs from the U.S. Coast Guard Academy and a master's in instructional and performance technology from Boise State University. He's the author of the books Command Your Transition and Scale, and I'll have links to both of those in the show notes. And he works as a coach for military members with 8 to 10 years of service to implement an intent and strategy to transition out of the military and achieve even greater success on the outside. So Travis, to start things off, anything to add to that background or about your personal life?
No, that's it. That's it.
All right.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. Well, I wanted to start off, you're still active in the Coast Guard, and I thought it was helpful to hear a little bit more about your background, because it sounds like from your transition, you were thrown a bit of a curveball by the Coast Guard and ended up staying in for, or deciding to stay in for 20 years. And I'd love to hear a little bit more about that story.
Absolutely. So really two curveballs. In 2012, the Coast Guard activated an early retirement program targeting specifically officers at the 03, 04, 05 pay grade. Coast Guard was allowed by Congress to early retire 200 officers over the course of 5 years. About this time, I had just made 04, and I had gotten the talk. And if you know, like John Boyd, Colonel John Boyd, in his biography, he always gave the to-be-to-do speech. I had a similar talk, and nowhere near as formal, but you know, a couple of my friends, a couple of my mentors pulled me aside right after I made 04, and they said, hey, Travis, look, if you want to make 05, the path you're on will not get you there. And I was a little flippant about it. I'm like, yeah, okay, no big deal, whatever. This early retirement thing is out. I'm going to be all right. And then one of my friends was like, no, I don't think you understand. You're having the talk right now. And I stopped. I'm like, wait a minute. You're giving me the talk. They're like, yeah, we're giving you the talk. Here's what you got to do. If you do these things, the chance that you make it 05 is very low risk. There's no guarantees, but the chances for you to make 05 is very low risk. If you stay on the path you're on, the chance for not promoting will be very high risk. And I thought about it for a while, and I said, you know what? I want to punch out early. I love California. I was stationed in Petaluma, Sonoma County. I love wine country. I want to go get my doctorate. Thank you for the opportunity. Thank you for opening my eyes. But I'm going to walk away. So I took my deployment, my assignment to the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia, as a way to start lining up my transition out of the military. And I got to New Orleans, and I thought it'd be unprofessional to show up at a new unit immediately trying to retire. So I said, I'll give New Orleans a year, and I'll put in for retirement. Well, unfortunately, Office of Workforce Forecasting said that we have enough officers transitioning through the promotion board process, and that early retirement doesn't need to be used this year, which is right now. So instead of applying for retirement, I screened and was not selected for 05. And I wasn't shocked at all. I expected it. I saw it coming. I knew why. But I also know that the early retirement program don't authorize and activate it, may not be used in the next year, which would be my last chance to get it. And now I've got to play the long game. I've got to play till 2021. I'll be here till 2018. So my last tour, my Twilight tour, I have to look at, and my assignment officer asked me, honestly, he's like, look, Travis, do you want a soft landing or do you want to fight for it? And I'm kind of still working through my own intention for which way I should go now.
What a man, what an emotional roller coaster. I can only imagine kind of gearing up and settling in and getting a plan in place to transition and getting fired up for that switch of directions, and then having to shift gears again. And it just, I imagine that's quite a juggling act of picturing two different lives and jumping back and forth between the two of them.
It is, and for two reasons. One, personally, I would love to do the route that you've done and so many others, go to a top 25 MBA school, use that as my transition experience, and go into the private sector. So now I've got to put all that on hold. But on the other hand, at the leadership level, what I've learned is that we're taught, not formally, we're led to believe that not promoting is a negative thing, that it's failure, but it's only feedback. I have 40 members who work for me, 403s, four lieutenants, and one didn't make it last year for 04. One wasn't selected, and we weren't sure why. We kind of had an idea why. We did everything we could to get him over the hump, and he got over the hump this year. And it's when you're not selected for promotion in the Coast Guard, your CEO has to formally tell you face-to-face before the message comes out. It's one of the nice things the Coast Guard does because we're so small. So the Office of Personnel Management will send emails out to the districts, to the commanding officers, and say, hey, these are the people who didn't make it. Notify them. Let us know we're notified. And then we'll release the message. So what normally happens in that process is when you're notified, your CEO says, go home. I didn't. I told everyone I knew I didn't get selected. And one of my lieutenants was like, why are you here? I'm like, look, I made choices. Those choices have consequences. This is the result. And honestly, at the end of the day, I'm 04. I'm going to get to retirement. So to me, it's all house money. Now, I know I got over the hump to 04, so it's a little different perspective. So yeah, me personally, the transition experience was a roller coaster because I started putting plans into place to get out, go to grad school, and make grad school my true transition that I had to put on hold for 5 years. But as a leader, and I'll still be a leader till the day I retire, it's also about setting the right example. And my intent is for service to be who I am, not just what I wear. And my intent is to take every chance possible, not just in the military career, but for my lifestyle, for my life on the outside. And I want my subordinates to understand and appreciate that. I'm not going to be sad by not promoting. Mm.
That's great. And you know, so I'm just picturing when, you know, you started to gear up to exit the Coast Guard and then had to switch gears. I'm imagining you started to put, you know, just starting to think a lot about how you wanted to transition. And I know in your writing that you cover a lot of different topics, but I thought we could start with the transition process and what advice you have for those on active duty about embracing a transition strategy really early in the transition process.
I went through TAPS in 2012, and our TAPS coordinator in Alameda, she's awesome. She's definitely one of the inspirations for writing Major Transition. She had this room full of 06s and E9s, and she told them this light bulb statement. She goes, look, find a job where you can bank your retirement for the first decade after you retire. And it was like the pen dropped. Everyone's like, well, what about compensating? What about, why shouldn't I be equivalent? She goes, no, I don't think you understand. Your skills, you have to work on your skills being commensurate to what you already have. Don't make your last year of active service the highest income you earn from your own efforts. And that was a shock to officers and senior enlisted who had been in the military their entire adult lives. We had always been taught, use your retirement income to supplement the job you want to have on the outside. That way your level of employment if you're looking for on the outside isn't as great. I would say from that, to be honest, me personally, I don't want my 41st birthday, my 41st year on this earth, to be the year I make the most income as a human being. I don't want that. I absolutely 100% do not want that. I'm looking at trying to go in the other direction for my fourth decade out here on this earth. So I would say, to answer your question, the number one thing to do is be honest. Be honest about where you are. And I kind of wrote Command Your Transition because where I was at the eight-year mark, I got picked up for grad school. And the Coast Guard grad school is not a guarantee for 04, but there are some cases of officers who go to grad school who do not get selected for lieutenant commanders. But I thought grad school would be a great way to have skills on the outside as well. However, I didn't think about who I would be as an 04. I didn't think about who I would be as someone on the cusp of 05. I didn't think about who I would be at 32, 33 years old. If I had taken all those things into account, I'm not sure if I would have gotten to grad school. Because for me, going to grad school locked me in for ultimately 5 more years. Here I am at 2016, 7 years from grad school, and I have to go to 2021 because I have to get a pension. So it's honesty helps you craft a better answer about why you want to stay in and what you want to do while you're in. And that's the first part of my book is declare your intent. You know, what's your intention? What's your intention for service? And if you're honest about your intention, you'll always find an avenue to express an intention. But the first thing you have to do is be honest.
How do you, I agree with what you're saying, and I'm wondering, and it resonates so much with what so many people say when I'm speaking with them about setting that intention, or, you know, some people call it soul searching work, or some people call it self-knowledge. And I'm wondering, anything that you've done yourself or you've seen others do to help uncover that intention, to help kind of get to the bedrock of what motivates them, what lights them up, you know, what they want to really do with their life. Any thoughts on either resources or exercises or things to help with that?
One thing that's helped me is sprinting. So sprinting is this idea that you take time to play. You take time to experiment. And it's kind of a derivative from Josh Kaufman's personal MBA. So Josh Kaufman said, this is 2008 and forward, that you should take a percentage of your income and put it into a personal R&D budget, your own research and development, for just harebrained ideas that you think may or may not work, to give them a shot. I think that investment should be time as well, not just money. So in July, I took a week of leave to go to Austin to try to be an improv actor. I'm in improv now on the side. It's one of the ways that helps me stay grounded to the local community. And the school I go to here is the number one school in New Orleans, and they also have a huge school in Austin. And they do these boot camps, these week-long boot camps twice a year. So I went to Austin for a week, and I was an improv actor for a week. We did 8 hours of class a day. We did a show every night for 5 nights, got involved with the community, met other improv actors, saw their shows, saw that community work, felt what it was like to be an actor, see if that's what I wanted to do on the outside. And it's something I would absolutely want to do. However, if I want to succeed, if I want to be at the six-figure level of improv, I've got to move to L.A. I've got to live in Hollywood. Or I've got to move to Chicago. Or I've got to move to New York City. Austin wouldn't have that level of income that I would want to be considered successful in my own definition. So sprinting is one way that you can physically do that. It's a way to immerse yourself in that experience. Now, how do you get that experience? You experiment. You look around. You start skimming LinkedIn. Anything you think, hey, that'd be cool to do, that'd be cool to try out, well, go try it out as small or big of a way as you can. In my book, I also talk about takeover weekends, which is kind of one of the things I do in my coaching practice. Takeover weekends, the same thing, but instead of being a week long, you take a weekend, and you take over that weekend into your new life. So if you want to be a mixed martial arts fighter, maybe you do, I don't know. You take a weekend, you find one of the best gyms in the country, whether it's Top Team or any of the others, and you go train there for a weekend. You go see what the environment's like for a weekend. If you have read Tim Ferriss's 4-Hour Chef, you know, he talks about doing a 40-hour culinary course in 3 days, and he talks about all the meals he made in the first chapter of his book. It's the same idea. You immerse yourself in a weekend in that new lifestyle. And we get 30 days to leave a year, so if there is the opportunity for you to take leave, spend some of your leave living that new life and figuring out if it works for you or not. If it doesn't, then now you know. Instead of, it's so unfortunate how veterans don't practice their new life until they're already in their new life. And really, by then, you're behind the eight ball. So any opportunity you could take now while you're in uniform, I mean, look at it this way. The military is funding you as the R&D project to find the best life, the best way you can serve others.
I love that, man. There's so many things that you're saying that I like. I mean, I really like, first of all, that thought of setting aside that personal R&D budget. And I have never heard it put that way, but I think that makes a ton of sense. And I can think of in my own life and my wife's life, the way that we do set aside money for just fun experiments to try something new and try a new project or a new business idea or a new app or something like that, or just investing in ourselves and attending a weekend or a workshop or something that like, you know, hearing you talk about improv, how that clearly energizes you, how that helps you ground yourself and connect with others. And I think that there's such a value to that. And investing in oneself is such a valuable use of money and such a great way to uncover what they may want to do. And I love that that second thought of the deep dive and I got this picture of just trying on a new life and a new lifestyle and a new way of life. And, you know, I think that a lot of people put off any sort of change because they think that they have to do it all at once. Like I'm going to figure out my dream job and I'm going to go do that for 5 years rather than lowering the bar to participate and just trying something for a week or a few days or a few weekend. And that thought that you brought up of sprinting, of just immersing yourself and trying it out. And you know, business school, I used to think of in terms of mini internships of we would have our Wednesdays off or you'd have a week for spring break. And can you take that week and go shadow someone and go work in an office? Or can you take that one day and go step in? And sure, it's not the same as having a month-long internship, but most of us, especially as we get older, you don't need that that large a data set to figure out, would I be happy here? Would I like this? Are these the type of people I'd want to be around? So I think that's great advice. And like you said, within the military, you've got 30 days. That's 30 potential days that you could devote to all of these different sprints, all of these different weekend experiments. And what a great way to start preparing to figure out what you want to do on the other side.
Absolutely. And I was talking to Josh Dennison recently, or John Dennison recently. And I guess he went through Stanford Ignite, and he was able to get permissive TDY to go through Ignite. I don't see my bosses allowing me to do that. But you're right. Finding those condensed opportunities to gain that experience, to gain that data, and really triangulate. I mean, you're taking a fix. You're taking a fix on geography, income, occupation, and fit. And if it works, it works. If it doesn't, then you just keep trying something else.
Yeah, I think that's great. I love that image too of triangulating. And you're right. There's so many different pillars to place down. It could be around geography. It could be around the functional role or the industry. There's so many different things. And it's about picking which of these that you really want to invest in or that you want to make critical in the decision of what you're going to do.
Absolutely.
I'm wondering also, you know, I know that you talk about finding the lifestyle to live, serve, and be honored by. And I'm wondering what you'd want to share with listeners around uncovering that and what you mean by that lifestyle to live, serve, and be honored by.
David Sedaris, the SAS NPR host, talks about four burner theory. And Randy Zuckerberg had a speech a couple of years ago that really took from him, and she added a fifth element. So Sedaris in Australia, he was talking to this cabbie, and the cabbie, she said, look, there's four burners, there's four areas in life you keep hot. There is work, there's family, there's friends, and there's health. No one keeps all four burning, let's be honest. If you put four things on a stove, you're going to mess up. So it's okay to have three, but to be truly great, you probably have two. So what are those two going to be? For a lot of us in the military, family's automatic, 100% automatic. For us in the military, our friend burner changes from being everyone in uniform to no one in uniform, and that could be a huge identity burden. The nature of work changes. I mean, we know what everyone gets paid in the uniform. We know. We could figure it out. Whereas on the outside, you don't know what the person next to you is paid by, or if you're an entrepreneur, everything you're paid, every dollar revenue is by your own effort, not by the pay scale. So the identity of work, that burner of work changes, and health changes too. We've all got our share of bumps and bruises and injuries that we collected over the years. So the nature of our health has shifted from needing to be in a warfighting environment, just being general upkeep and maintenance and mobility. This goes back to the idea of being honest. Be honest about which burners do you want to keep burning. Now, a lot of my work in Command to Transition is about the work burner. That's where I'm looking at right now. Like, I'm double burning my work burner, being both in the military and working in my coaching practice. I am sacrificing a lot. You know, I live in New Orleans. I don't go to Bourbon Street every weekend. I have a very small, condensed circle of friends, maybe 5 or 10 people I see consistently every week, and that's about it. My health is getting better, and my family isn't close to me, nor am I married. So, you know, I've made some choices about the kind of family I have close to me that's really the life I want to live. Those are my choices. And there's some extremes like that, like the Gary Vaynerchuk's of the world. Who work 17, 18 hours a day in the social media space, but they spend their 2 days a week with their family and do nothing else. So there's, you still have to be honest about what that experience you want in your life. Like, what do you want to keep running when you're on the outside? Another way to look at it is the idea of pace that I talk about in the book. But right now we're in a very interesting election season in a whole lot of ways. But one thing I've learned from D.C. is there's two paces of a political campaign. There's a pace of campaigning, and there's a pace of governance. And every politician does one thing on the campaign trail and does one thing on the con. And I never really had a model to understand why that is. The truth is that once politicians get into governance, the world does change. Some of those promises truly can't be fulfilled. Some of the tragedy of the commons become all that more burdensome. It's just a completely different world when you're on the trail than it is when you're in the office, when you're on the con, when you're driving the helm. And think about what that is going to look like for you. There's a rhythm of the service. We have our workups, we have deployment, we have our stand down, we have our dry docks, our dock sides, our overhaul, pistas. We have our battle rhythm of uniform. And maybe to help with your pace, figure out your battle rhythm outside of the uniform. Maybe you can put those pieces together of how many hours a day do you want to spend with your family? How many hours a day do you want to spend at work? And maybe from there you can build an experience from the ground up versus the burner approach where you're building it from the top down.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, I like the aspect of that, of just being very deliberate in how you structure your life. And I think it can be very easy for me to just let things happen and, you know, agree to meet up with friends all the time or agree to all the different demands on my time. And you're right, you know, you have a finite amount of time. And so, you know, it sounds like in your case, pursuing your goal means going out less and partying or seeing friends less or making relationship decisions or seeing the family less. And it is what I like about the way you put that is that, you know, there's a way to be very passive in life and there's a way to be very proactive and have ownership in your own life of choosing how and where you want to spend time and setting your sights on where you want to go and be willing to, like you said, turn on both of those burners for one area of your life and really focus on that, because that's probably what's necessary to get there. And so I like that thought of being really proactive in the use of time rather than just letting it fill up with all the millions of things that can make demands on all of our time.
Full agreement. And coming out of the military, as we do, you know, it's what we're used to. We're used to a POD, a POW. We're used to quarters and muster. We're used to formation. You know, we're used to roll call. You know, we're used to a 24-hour time clock. And I am dating someone now who's amazing. She is incredible. And we joke about the clock because she doesn't tell military time. And teaching her just the simple thing of military time, the simple perspective of it, helped me realize, like, wait a minute, we use 24 hours in the day, whereas if you're a civilian, you've got your AM and your PM. The cycles, even by semantics, feel and are different. So I believe if we can replace some of those components we're used to in the uniform once we're out of the uniform, it helps make that transition so much easier. It helps us to bridge that gap.
That's great. And I wanted to talk about your coaching work, and maybe just to start off, for those who are on active duty and may not be familiar with the thought of a coach, how would you explain the work you do in coaching?
There are a lot of people you can have in your corner as you face your transition. There's really five groups of people, five communities of people, and you have them in uniform. You just may not realize it, but you definitely need them to work your way out of the uniform and on the other side. So you need mentors. And I define mentors as people who are 3 to 5 years ahead of you in what you want to do. So one thing I've learned in the military is that there are these communities of officers who groom their replacements, who groom their entourage. There are. There honestly are. And usually those officers are about in a span of 3 to 5 years from each other, usually 5 years. So if there's an 06 wanting to make flag, and he does make flag, or she does make flag, they're going to have a group of officers about 5 years junior to them, their 05 specifically, who will be doing the work for them, will be doing their bidding. So it happens in uniform. You see, you kind of do the same thing out of uniform. Advisors are more about, I hate to say balance, but I'll say triage. They're more about the burner triage. They're more about life on the outside. And if you see a lot of the veterans groups on LinkedIn, they're amazing and awesome groups. And a lot of the people act more so about it as being advisors. We see the frustration a lot of veterans have about getting out, it not being like they expected, the life not being the way they wanted it to be. And that's what advisors do. I truly believe that work should support a lifestyle. A lifestyle should not support the work, which is a little, not hierarchical, it's a little, it sounds a little like blasphemy against what we've done in uniform, but truly it is. I mean, the work supports a lifestyle. We buy into a lifestyle of the uniform, not the work of the uniform. On the outside, you don't get that kind of marriage of work and life. So advisors help you do that. Coaches. I'll say coaches number three, and then we'll talk about the other two communities of people you need. A coach is a mirror. A coach is someone who incisively challenges your thinking, your feelings, and your assumptions to help you produce better actions and better results. There is the Albert Einstein quote, you can't solve the problems at the same level of thinking that created them, and a coach helps you shift your thinking. I personally got into coaching when I started my doctorate program in 2011. I had two coaches for about a year. One was a retired Coast Guard officer. She was amazing. She helped me relate coaching to being an officer. And the one I still have now after 5 years is a civilian who used to work in the Valley, now is in Portland. And her goal is to, her objective is to challenge my belief about being a business owner, about living this life, this day life, night life of being an officer who on the side wants this sprawling, monstrous, impressive, service-oriented business. Coaching is a way that you find insights from yourself that you may not find at work and that you may not find trying to triage your life. It's kind of a meta. It's kind of an after-action level of reviewing your life and evaluating your life. The other two groups you need, and this is also where coaching helps, you need a mastermind. You know, I believe that everyone who promotes, especially at 06 and above, doesn't promote on their own. They have a mastermind group behind them, helping them figure out how to do their job, what assignments to take, where to go, what commands to go for, and everything else. If you think about grad school, you know, your study group in grad school becomes your mastermind 10 years later. Your study group in grad school becomes the CEOs, the COOs of the companies that you can work with on the side. Like, it's not a conspiracy. It's just that you find like-minded people who are going in a similar direction as you, not say the same direction, and you bring your service, your skills into the room to help them move, and they help you move. And then finally, accountability. And accountability, we've had that in uniform since time immemorial. We accountability from the second we start boot camp or the academy to the day we get out. An accountability group keeps you on target and keeps you on task for what you want to accomplish. There's really five groups of people you need. You need mentors, you need advisors, you need an accountability group, you need a mastermind group, and you do need a coach. And it's something that we don't hear a lot about in the military. I mean, I've heard of coaches before. You know, I've gotten my coaching certification for 360 assessments. When you hear about coaching in the military, it's very military context based, whereas true coaching on the outside is not about just the military context, it's a life context. It's about what strengths do you want to highlight and what weaknesses do you want to minimize. It's about what feelings do you want more of and what feelings do you want less of. I know we're talking about military members and feelings sounds kind of soft and wooey, or it's about what thought patterns you want to change and how do you want to change them. I mean, a coach can help you work through the habit cycle of getting new habits in a place to make it on the outside. That opportunity, those opportunities are there. And there are a couple of groups, specifically on LinkedIn and other places where coaches can do what coaches do in that context. So that's high level. Detail level, I do weekend events here in New Orleans in small group formats to help veterans create a transition plan. And I do one-on-one coaching over the phone and online too in cohort 10 to 12 week style format specifically to help veterans command their transition. The number one is sales. I was a real estate agent when I was stationed in South Texas for 4 years, and I was a horrible real estate agent. I sold 2 homes in 4 years. Horrible. Didn't survive. Now, this is during the downturn, 2008, 2007, but I had an amazing set of mentors, amazing agents. They were making low six figures. They were making easily 200 a year, both of two in particular I worked for. But I didn't incorporate their style and their lessons into my practice because I was afraid to be a salesman. I'm still a little bit afraid to be a salesman. In the military, we don't have to worry about sales. As a civilian, you know, sales, revenue, you know, revenue is the lifeblood. No revenue, no life. But all the advice about resumes, informational interviews, job fairs, it all comes back to sales. And, you know, that said, I believe that veterans are more suited to sales roles, to being salesmen of themselves than most. It's just trying to figure out the language of sales that translates. You know, we know how to find value. We know how to bring and provide value. It's just that we get wrapped up in the structure and filter of military jargon and military speak and military assignment that it doesn't translate to the industry. So, yeah, I think the number one challenge, top of top, is sales. And you know what? We have to be salesmen and saleswomen, 100%. That is what drives business. That is what drives success on the outside. And that sounds very MBA heavy. It sounds very capitalist heavy. And, you know, honestly, it is because we're not all going to go to nonprofits. We're not all going to go BGS employees. We're not all going to stay in the public sector. If we want to be in the private sector, we have to understand apply sales principles to who we are and what we've done. And sometimes we have to accept the fact that what we're selling ourselves as isn't commensurate with what we think it should be commensurate with. So yeah, sales is the number one challenge, I think, that a lot of us face in a transition, because the way we sell ourselves in a uniform is not how we sell ourselves outside a uniform. And the second you make that change, you know, everything changes. You know, I'll bring back my promotion as an example. I sat down on my 06 and went over my OER, my sit rep, and my captain goes, you know, your OER doesn't sell you as a senior officer. And I'm like, wait a minute. I thought it was a great OER. I'm thinking, wait a minute, someone, there's a level of sales I don't know after 15 years in that someone has to educate me on now? No wonder. This is an interesting feedback. I used to say, no wonder I failed. But now I say, well, and I said it then. I'm like, that is some interesting feedback, Captain. Tell me how I can sell myself better. And yeah, it's about performance, but it's also about sales. But again, military sales, civilian sales, two different islands. And the sooner you cross the island, it's not an ethics thing. It's not a sleazy thing. There's so many models out there. There's so many tactics out there. It's about value. And if you truly believe in your value, you owe it to yourself to be the best salesperson you can be.
It's, you know, one of the best pieces of advice I got from one of the most prominent instructors at Stanford Business School, Irv Grossbeck, was just about particularly for entrepreneurs, but I think this applies across the board, how valuable the functional skill set of sales is, and how everything does boil down to sales, you know, selling yourself to an employer, selling yourself to clients, selling yourself to investors, selling yourself to people you work with. And so I agree that that's a very, very valuable skill set. And it's just funny because it seems like sales is something that most veterans have an aversion to, particularly in selling themselves. I think that in the military, the norm is to underplay your own contribution and to play up the contribution of the team, which I think is very, very valuable. And it's something that needs to be overcome in that transition to civilian life. And I find it interesting because I think that veterans are so well suited to sales, because sales takes so much determination, so many relationship aspects, so many things that I think most veterans have, just really have in spades these skills that contribute to them being fantastic salespeople. And yet it sometimes feels at odds to the natural inclination of a veteran to take up that sort of sales mantle. So I think that's really interesting that you point that out. And I know we're running short on time. I guess I would maybe end with more of a catch-all. And you said a lot of great things about using opportunities to develop skill sets and figure out what you want to do. You've said a lot about mentors and advisors and coaches and common roadblocks. I'm wondering, anything else you'd want listeners to know about, or any other advice that you want to impart on to them?
Four things, and I'll be done. And this is career and life guidance. You know, number one thing, be honest. Just be honest with yourself. The world does not have time for us to be dishonest in our choices. And that's not a negative thing. That's just, if you're waffling, and you know, I'm saying this, if I'm waffling about how strong I want to go for fighting for 05, so I need to take my own medicine. But be honest. Be honest about the why. Be honest about your intent. In the military, you know, you had your great article about what happens if people get out at 5, 10, 20, 25 years. Those are the four coming dates, and the reasons people get out at those points are a little different. I focus at the 10-year mark because, at least in the current retirement system, not the new pension system, you know, 10 does mean 20, and there's a gulf of people who leave between 10 and 20. There's a paucity of people who do that. So be honest. Be honest about why you serve. If you want the pension, go for the pension. If you want the plush assignments, go for the plush assignments. If you want to be a water walker, be a water walker. If you just want to, I hate to say it, if you want to punch the clock and be a 4-0 sailor, punch the clock and be a 4-0 sailor. And realize what the consequences are. Second, you know, think two tours ahead. So right now I'm thinking about soft landing or fighting for more. And, you know, honestly, I'm leaning towards soft landing because it sets me up for better for life on the outside. Think two tours ahead. Three, this kind of goes back to the honesty. One of my 05s in Petaluma told me the advice he got, and it was to have a plan to stay in, have a plan to get out, and be comfortable with both. And it took me over a decade to have a plan to get out. And, you know, a little small side story, I also didn't make 03 the first time around. That hurt more than not making 05 the first time around. And I had no plan. That was part of the reason why it hurt more. I had no idea at 26 years old, leaving the Coast Guard, what I was going to do with my life. I had no clue. Or I had no idea what I was going to do to make 30. I had no idea. So have a plan to stay in, have a plan to get out, and be comfortable with both. And fourth piece of advice, carry two guns. I'm writing a blog post about military transition, like three-gun shooting. I just watched Magnificent Seven last week, both the Yul Brynner version and the new version. I think as military members, we have to be prepared. You know, in the Coast Guard, we say separate paratus, always ready. I think this idea of carrying two guns, have skills that work both inside and outside the service, and always continue to refine those skills in both contexts. And that makes transition seamless. So be honest. Think two tours ahead. So think anywhere from 5 to 7 years ahead and think about the steps to get you there. Have a plan to stay in. Have a plan to get out. Be comfortable both. And carry skills. You know, I think of Liam Neeson and Taken. Carry a certain set of skills that will help you in as many and broad contexts as possible.
Travis, this is great. I appreciate your taking the time to speak with me. I'll put links to your site and your books in the show notes. And enjoy New Orleans and hard charging over there.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Justin. I really appreciate the opportunity.
Surface, surface, surface.